This is RSV Me Update, episode 534, recorded Saturday, September 12th, 2015. The success. Hi, everyone, and thank you for joining us for RSBNB Update. Sitting in with myself this week is King Kulla.
Hello, everyone. How's it going? I guess you can't answer me, but I'll ask anyways.
Yeah, King Kulla is the one who does most of the Informer articles, puts them out, and makes sure that they look well and are readable for everyone. So if there's ever a typo in an Informer article, he's the one you can complain to.
Yeah, because, you know, even I'm human.
Yeah, well, but, I mean, you have fixed some typos in the past that did scoot by. So we won't mention what some of them were, but yeah.
Because they never happened.
Exactly.
And
some of them were, you know, the result of iOS. But anyways. you guys might be wondering where Earth is this week. Well, put it shortly, he went outside this weekend for a little weekend getaway trip. So, yeah. There's a whole hashtag associated with it, but I won't provide that because I'm not sure if he wants that out there or not. But there was a hashtag involved. So, anyway.
A very amusing hashtag, shall we say.
Oh, it was. It really was. So, I mean.
It was so quintessentially Reed, too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, we should have had a hashtag, but we'll talk about that later, eh?
Yeah, we can definitely do that later. That's totally fine.
Yeah, so this week is a patch notes week, getting ready for, I guess, the quest coming next week. So that means that we just have a couple of things to talk about in terms of the patch notes. Seeing as you're pretty much retired from RS, I want to ask you if you have any that stand out to you. But feel free to look at the release notes and see if anything, you know, jumps out of your head and, you know, you want to talk about, and I can fill you in on what it means. But anyways, starting off with the Wilderness Warbands. First off, supplies will now be converted into non-tradable versions when exiting the Wilderness. So you might ask, what does this mean? Well, I've never done Warbands, but from my research that I've been able to tell, this essentially means that there will be no trading of Warband supplies, meaning that your warband supplies will be the only ones that you're able to get, so you need to take part in that game. Or, I guess, I'm not sure whether that's a mini-game or a distraction and diversion. But, anyways, you take part in it, and what you get is yours, and that's the way it goes. And for me, from a skilling side of things, I think that this is probably a good update to have, because, I mean, you don't want to have warbands, you know, generating incoming content for various skills and whatnot, because if you're doing that, what's the point of skilling, right? That's my main concern with warbands, and has ever since it came out.
Well, I would think it also provides some sort of achievement for, say, the higher level rewards that you might get using it. You know, if you can just buy them, then it's not much of an achievement to it, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, at the end of the day, PvP, I mean, I don't know. You did lots of PvP back in your olden days, didn't you?
I did. I wouldn't say I was very good at it, but I did, with my clan and whatnot.
Yeah.
It was fun for the social aspect.
Yeah. Anyways, I think warbands is all we got for PvP these days. But anyways, moving on to the next bullet point here. Players may attack each other outside of the normal wilderness level restrictions when carrying supplies. So, you know, the usual wilderness level plus your combat or minus your combat. So that doesn't come into play if you're carrying supplies. So if you're 3, well, you can get one hit by a level 138. There you go. I hear the crickets on that one.
Oh yeah, that's very fitting. It'll come in handy for if you make a really bad joke, or if I make a really bad joke. All the other has to do is stay silent, then we'll hear crickets.
Anyways, players.
Just like there.
Moving on to Crystal Shapeshifters now, players will no longer lose focus when they switch combat style, which is good, because, I mean, anytime you lose focus in combat, you lose adrenaline, and it ultimately slows the progress down. So, I haven't gone back to fight these after the Light Within, so it's not something I have first-hand experience with, but I'm sure those of you guys out there who do fight the Shapeshifters are happy about this. Players will no longer float below monkey bars when crossing them on Ape Atoll.
But that looked rather amusing.
Yeah, and I mean, you get these kind of little things that can crop up in game based on, you know, small change to a model or something like that, and it's not really realized because, well, Ape Atoll agility course is such a narrow range in terms of levels, so... Good that that's
I wonder if the characters still did like the movements and whatnot that they would normally do.
Oh, probably.
So they just look like they were grabbing things in midair.
Oh, probably. Probably. Elite Rune Dragons have been converted to use the new Elite Monster Spawn system, which is good because, I mean, previously the Elite Rune Dragon would just attack you, and if you weren't prepared, well, that could be pretty painful. So now, just like everything else, you'll have 3 minutes to decide how to deal with it. And finally, Yakamaru is now green when poisoned in low detail.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it's from the new raids feature. And see, when raids came out, I made the idea that Yakamaru sounded like a Japanese name, right?
Well, it does sound like one, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, exactly. And I said it with that, you know, Japanese samurai Tim.
Yakamaru!
There you go!
Like that?
Just like that, and everyone laughed at me.
Well, for once, I don't think I would laugh at you, because that's how I pictured it when I first saw it.
Well,
here.
Yeah, as I said, they're creating the Axis from World War II, because there's Beastmaster Durzag, which sounds German, right?
Durzag sounds German?
Yeah.
That sounds Balkan to me.
Oh, okay. Well, anyways, yeah. And Yakamaru.
Something vaguely Eastern European, I guess we could say.
Anyways, anything else in the patch notes that you find amusing?
Not really. Normally I do, but the only one thing that I saw that was kind of funny was players may once again complete the I brought your stuff back achievement. That just looks kind of funny.
Yep. All right. Also this week, some interesting things from the merchandising store. Basically, players have been given the option so that they can now actually purchase clothing with bonds. So any t-shirt, you'll have shipping included. 6 bonds, you can get it. So, I mean, if that's your kind of thing and you want to throw RuneScape money on a pair of or piece of apparel, you might as well, right? I guess. Because for some of these far-flung lands, shipping can be pretty expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, $19.99 Canadian plus shipping. Whereas six bonds is about $30. So.
Shipping's pretty expensive regardless.
Yeah, that's right.
Doesn't seem to matter where you live now. It's just it charges you as much as the actual item is that you're wanting to ship.
And a bond's currently going for around 9.6 million GP, so 9.6 times 6, 54 million for a real-life shirt.
Ooh.
I don't know. I think
well,
that's kind of steep.
You have to think that someone would spend that money on it, but... how many? That's another question altogether, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I know I have better things to spend my in-game money on. Anyways, also this week, start of the Clan Cup in terms of skilling and bossing, so it should be interesting to see what ends up happening. I know Clan Quest might be participating in that, but since there's no Quest Cup, we're not doing anything actively full bore. So. All right, so next up, we have a little lores and histories. These don't happen all that often, and I mean, I guess it's about time Jagex give us another one of these here, because, the Vampire Quest is coming out next week, and this one is called The Old Blood, and it basically features Lord Draken as he hunts down Samurak loyalists. So, give some insight into what happened in the past about that. You can give that a read on the Jagex website. It is a very long and in-detail summary of everything that's happened in terms of the vampire storyline. So if you're into lore, this is probably something you'll want to read. And I'd also like to point out that at Clan Quest, we have a summary of everything that's happened in the Myrec Quest series up until this point. So if you're interested in reading that, you can find the links in our show notes at update.rsbnb.com. And that's the Myrec summary written by Sirion. Such a great guy that one is.
That's some pretty cool art they have there, too, on that page.
Oh, yeah. They've really stepped up their game in terms of art. And apparently the bird agrees.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there's a whole contest with this. Yes?
We could just pretend I'm outside as well, I suppose.
Yeah, but the beauty of it is you're not, and it's probably pitch dark out there now, right?
No, it's just getting to sunset.
Oh, okay. Well, it's already dark here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Anyway,
it's getting there, but not quite.
Oh wow! They even have a wallpaper that's just the right size for a phone, 640 by 1136. All right. So, what's next? Vampire behind the scenes video. In terms of next week's Lord of Vampirium quest, I guess I'm looking forward to it. The Vampire quest line was never my favorite. Did you get a chance to do any of those Eastern quests when you were a member?
I think I did the first one or the second one. I can't remember. It was all to do with I can't remember what one it was called, but I remember it was, you were having to discover what happened to this town, and there was all these people with weird injuries or whatever, and then it turns out it was the vampires that were doing it, and that was kind of like the introduction to the quest line.
Priest in Peril?
Yeah.
No,
that was the other one. Although
so
I
it would have been
that.
In Search of the Myrec then.
Yeah, that one.
Okay, well.
Yeah.
This is going to be the penultimate quest in the series. It's a master level quest. In terms of requirements, we're anticipating 75 constitution, 79 construction, 75 defense, 76 hunter, 75 prayer, 78 slayer, and 75 strength. So nothing 80 plus, which makes it easier for letting people into this quest, which I think is good. Remains to be seen what kind of combat we're looking at, though. These ones are always kind of heavy on combat.
Mm-hmm.
So, we shall see. Let's hope everything turns out to be great. Anyways, I suppose I should ask any RS stuff you'd like to talk about before we move on to our questions of the week.
Any RS stuff I want to talk about? You're trying to entice me back again, aren't you? No, I think I'm pretty good with that. It does really seem like they've stepped up quite a bit in the past, like even just past year or two, in how they present information, how they present different things. Like they go really in depth.
Yeah, with a high level of production value as well. Yeah. And I mean, that was the whole goal and objective of RS3. It's just kind of a shame it got derailed by the hatred for the evolution of combat when that came out. But that's largely subsided.
Well, because the people that hated it either left or they got used to it. And the people that loved it always stayed there regardless. So
yeah, that's right.
We always knew that was going to happen, if people would like it, not like it, and then people would kind of get used to it after a while.
Yeah, and I mean, it was a needed update. But anyways, we're getting off track. So, I guess before we go on to questions, I'll ask you a question myself and see if I can get a straight answer out of you. But are you prepared to give us a straight answer on the skill capes? The skill cape redo from back in April?
Yes, because the last time I was on in May, you said, what was it, that should they have gone along with what they did?
Should and they I have said, the question was, should Jagex have, you know, gone along with, you know, the whole player polling thing, or should this have just been an in-house project in order to, you know, mitigate some of the concern that would come from it? So do you have a straight answer for us?
No, because I can't even remember what I said now.
Well, that's the thing you're supposed to remember.
I'll have to go back and listen to it. Yeah, but I don't really, you know, remember all of the things I say 6 months ago, or how long ago was May? 4 months ago. Okay. That's still a long time. So it's good of you to have me back, Shane. That's my answer.
But the skill cave, should they have made it an in-house project without involving the players? Yes or no? To achieve a better result.
I think the way they could have done the poll was, I feel like they could have done that better if they were going to give it to the players. But if they were going to do it in-house anyways, then they could have still done the designs in-house and then given it up to the polls to see which designs they liked best.
That's what they
right?
did, and that backfired.
And then they backfired because people didn't vote for the right one, I guess, but that's a democracy, I suppose, so...
All right, so they should have gone with an in-house process then. Thank you for your answer.
I guess if it comes down to it, they either could have gone fully one way or gone fully the other way and not kind of try and appease both sides by going right in the middle. You know, they say that, wasn't it Churchill who said you don't do anything in your life if you don't make a few enemies along
That's
the way
right.
or something like that?
Yep. Yep.
So, yeah, they should have just made a decision and stuck with it.
All right. Glad that that's finally come out after how long it's been. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Well, we're going to move on to questions right now. The first one is an audio question from Parnassius.
G'day, guys. Parnassius here again. My question this week is in regard to the Star Fury armor. Now, we can get the Starlight or by mining or buying it on the GE, which I think is a great idea since it does have in-game benefits. However, to make it into the actual Star Fury armor, you have to basically win this on the Treasure Hunter chest, as they cannot be bought or sold. Now, you can mine them, but it's like 1 in 10,000, which is a little steep in my mind. What are your thoughts on this, and should Jagex have also made these tradable? Love to hear your thoughts on it, and as always, happy RuneScaping to all.
All right, yeah, we're going to cover the Star Fury armor with your question, Parnassius. You basically described exactly what the armor is. You get pieces of the Stardust on Treasure Hunter, and once you get a certain amount, you can make various pieces of armor. I have the matrix right here that shows how many of each you need to make a various item. So, for example, to make the magic ranged or melee boots, you need 2,000 dust. The helmet is 4. Leg plate 6, chest plate 10,000, sword 10,000 as well. So it's not going to be an easy thing to get. Let's get that out of the way right now. We're 3 days into the promotion as of recording, and I've only got 4,000 Starfire dust as it is right now. So I would have had to, you know, buy the rest on the GE and whatnot. But the real problem, I think, with this update is the fact that you need the diamonds in order to level up the armor. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, who wants level 40 hybrid armor? That's useless to anyone with a decent combat level. I mean, something like this should be more prevalent in-game. And, I mean, it kind of pushes the limit as to what it is and what is not acceptable on Treasure Hunter as it is, I think. So... that's my take on it.
Well, level 40, that's when you can start wearing a rune, isn't it?
that's 50 now, but yes.
Oh, that's 50 now, but okay. Well, that's really low for something that needs a lot of work to get it.
Yeah,
it seems,
and
isn't it? I mean, they look cool, but...
And then you need the armor, or the diamonds, rather, to level it up to level 70, which, as Parnassius said in his question, is really rare to get, or really rare to mine. So, I mean, it's not as though it is going to be something that's easy to get. I think at the end of the day, I see this going to be mainly used as a, you know, a cosmetic piece of armor that you'll uses an override, not something that you'll actually wear. So that, in some ways, makes it a little bit cheaper to get. Because if you look at Jagex's promotion with this, in the way they promoted it, they actually promoted it in terms of its looks. Which, if you look at it, it does look pretty sharp for armor that is provided by them. So, I mean, that is, I think, the core objective of this armor. It's not to provide a, you know, a 40 or a level 70 piece of hybrid gear, but, yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. So, like, for example, reading here, you can also collect stubborn diamonds via the same method as the ore, although they are much rarer. Okay, so we got that. Then they're used to upgrade your Starfire gear to Star Fury versions. To do so, you need the Starburn Diamond to upgrade them, and it comes with these benefits. So the highest stat tier unlocked, level 70 requirements, that's as high as they go. Improved appearance, 1500 mining XP per item upgraded. Armor can delay the depletion of Saren stones in Pristinus when mining there, allowing for prolonged training per stone. And the cloak acts like an Ava's accumulator if you've unlocked it. Armor pieces confer the exact same benefit as the golden mining suit if you've also unlocked them. Okay, so that, in my view, is actually pushing it because, I mean, it's a treasure hunter item that makes Saren stones last longer, which is AFK mining for already decent XP. And if you have talked to me any bit in the last number of months, you'll know that I feel that there's too much XP in this game. And there are certain parts of Pristinus that are a little bit overpowered. And I think the Saren Stones are one of them. So, yeah, definitely agree with what you said in the question here. And it should be easier to get. Definitely.
When you said Starborn Diamond, it kind of sounded like you said Stubborn Diamond.
Well, that is exactly what they could be.
I guess it's hard to get them, eh? So they are kind of stubborn in the method of acquirement.
Yeah. And, I mean, this is, for all intents and purposes, another shark outfit that's harder to get. And for anyone who doesn't remember, the shark outfit basically made it so that you could convert any kind of fish that you're getting into just extra XP so you didn't need to bank. So any fishing spot became somewhere you could just stay. So, I don't know. I normally don't have an issue with Treasure Hunter, but this one does rub me a little bit the wrong way.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for your question, Parnassius, and I love your accent. It's really cool.
He's from Australia.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, when you first played the question, I'm like, is he speaking English? Oh, wait, I guess I should listen a bit harder.
Well, of course he's speaking English.
I just heard Star Fury armor, and I'm like, what is he trying to say there? It's like, Star Fury armor. I'm like, I don't know what that is at all. And I'm like, oh, Shade, you have to help me out with this one. But yeah, now I understand for sure.
All right. Also, another thing with the Star Fury armor before we move on to the next question is if you don't want any armor, you can just take your Stardust and convert it into XP. You get 5 XP per Stardust that you use. So I got 20,000 XP when I converted mine in, and you do this at the Artisan's Workshop. So that's another option. And you can choose between either mining or smithing XP. So, wonder if I should have sold it. Oh, well. Anyways, next question would be from Colton. Thank you, Parnassus.
Greetings, hosts. You are all so, so fabulous. My question this week is, do you have a favorite soundtrack for a video game outside of RuneScape? For me, I've just recently been getting into the Shadow of the Colossus official soundtrack of late, and I don't know, I just love it. So, yeah, let me know. Have a great week, guys, and keep it up with the awesome shows.
Well, we try even in non-update weeks.
That's when you get people on like me that can just talk and talk and talk about nothing in particular.
Well, there are some say that I can do that as well.
Yeah, some would say that, and I would generally agree with them there. But at least when you talk, it's, you know, it's interesting, and I always learn something when I talk to you, Shane.
Oh, like my great revelation the other night, but we'll spare the listeners from that.
Yeah, what I learned then is how the heck did you get to that conclusion from what we were talking about? But it's amazing how the brain works, isn't it?
Yes. So, video game soundtracks. This is your question.
This is my question. My goodness. I personally love any game that has good music just solely for the good music. And I've got so many different soundtracks that I've loved to listen to over the years. But I think the ones that I love the most are ones that I can play for people that don't necessarily know the game, but still like the music. And a few of them that I really like are a game called Jazz Jackrabbit 2, which came out in the late 90s. It was kind of like a Sonic-style platformer game. And it had a really good soundtrack, especially some of the more the darker action themes in that game. They sounded really good. They were like, you know, pump-up sort of music. Some other games that I liked were the Donkey Kong Country soundtrack, especially Fear Factory. That one's the best song out of the bunch. But also, more recently, I also liked the Mass Effect soundtrack, especially their ending song that they brought
in. Oh, I knew that was
for
coming.
The credits. You did, didn't you? But the rest of the soundtrack itself is really good. The way they and the way they utilize the soundtrack is really good as well, because whenever they bring in whenever they bring you into a difficult section, they kind of ramp up the music. And they do that more in the later games. But in the first one especially, whenever you die, they bring in the main antagonist theme, Saren, if you didn't know. So whenever you die, you hear this, you know, evil-sounding theme. And it's like, oh, darn, I've just, you know, let him win. And the whole world, the whole galaxy is doomed. So when you actually finally meet up with him later on, that same theme plays, and it kind of conditions you to say, I really hate this guy, because no one likes dying in video games, right? So whenever you hear this later on when you meet up with Saren again, you automatically hate him because the music's playing that you really hate during your dying sequence. And I think games like that manage to utilize the soundtrack to enhance the game experience, that's what I really like. And there's a bunch of other different games that do that too. Like, there's games that use composed symphonic soundtracks, you know, such as Mass Effect. But there's also other games that use other people's work, such as Fallout, because I know that Reed, for one, really likes the Fallout soundtrack as well, especially from 3 in New Vegas. But there's many different ways to do it, and I've find it really fascinating. So,
if you had to choose one single favorite, what would it be?
If I had to choose one single favorite, it would probably still be Descent from 1995. They had a really good soundtrack on the Macintosh, because back then, DOS did not have good music.
Yeah, they had really poor audio quality. All right.
Yeah, it was like MIDI music basically, but now you can get a lot better. So yeah,
so they
I
did
still
not
like
have MIDI music back then on your Descent Macintosh video game in 95.
No.
Good.
Because the Macs of that time were a lot better upgraded.
You mean superior than PCs of the day?
I think superior in some aspects. I remember people still using, like, you remember the old iMacs when they first came out, the colored ones and whatnot?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. People use those, like, in schools for, like, art design and all those other sorts of, like, you know, music composition and whatnot. People would get Macs specifically for that.
Oh, yeah.
Because they were a lot better for those sorts of things.
And they still do that today, but the reasoning has changed. It's not because, you know, Windows can't produce a good audio file or anything like that. It's that the applications on OS X for content creation are just that much better.
Yeah.
And that's ultimately one of the reasons why people should get a Mac.
And that's one of the things that kind of evolved from way back then. But of course, we've kind of gotten a bit off topic, so I'll let you answer the question.
That's exactly what I was trying to do with this one. I almost convinced you to get a Mac.
Oh, no. I'd just have to take one look at the price, and then I'd walk away.
we were going to take a trip to the Apple store, weren't we?
You'd actually have to drag me there to get me to buy something. I'd look, but I don't think I'd buy at those prices.
Anyways, I honestly don't play many single-player games, so I do not have a video game soundtrack that I can talk about, unfortunately. Thank you, Colton.
But you do listen to the RuneScape one, though, don't you? When you play?
When I play and do quests, yeah.
Yeah.
When I'm playing RS for leisure, I don't, you know, turn the RuneScape music on. Only when I'm experiencing new RS content, I really do.
So is there any soundtrack from RuneScape that kind of stood out to you while you were playing the new content?
Well, just the whole RS3 suite that they did. I mean, when RS3 came out, they actually had their main songs that are used in most of the free world performed by a symphonic orchestra, which, I mean, was a huge step for Jagex and, in my view, made RS3 just that much more immersive. So you got that on one hand. On the other hand, you got the whole Elven suite, which is good, that we saw last year with the Elf City release, and lots of great reworked soundtracks coming out of Jagex recently, Temple Desecrated, so on and so forth. So they do a good job with that nowadays.
Mm-hmm. So I thought I'd let you answer the RuneScape part, because then you wouldn't be able to do the rest.
No, you presume correctly.
It's just because I know you too well.
All right, next question.
Okay, this question is from Brian. Cats are dogs. He spells or with an I, apparently, but anyways, cats are dogs. Let's let you answer, Shane.
Well, I am allergic as heck to cats, so let's just say no. And, for some odd reason, they always like to come to me.
They can sense your fear.
It's not a fear. It's just I don't want to get, fuzz and whatnot on me and have my eyes plug up and my eyes water and, feel like I have a head cold, a strong head cold for the next 48 hours. So, I never did have a dog. Saying never really had a dog would open that up to some kind of question that maybe there was a dog or something, but it wasn't really one. But no, I've never had one of those either. And
it wasn't really a dog?
Yeah, that's what I just opened myself up to. So,
come on, Reed would do it much worse than I did. So what was this kind of hybrid dog that you used to have that wasn't really a dog?
It didn't exist.
Oh.
It didn't exist.
You're not talking about your family members again, are you?
What's that supposed to
mean? I said you're not... Oh, come on. Now you're being too dogging about this. Crickets.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, I was just making a joke that one of your family members might have been a dog.
No. No.
You know, because so many people like to include their pets into their family and consider them family members.
That is going a little bit far.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was getting at.
Oh, okay. All right. You?
So down to the question, cats or dogs, you have to give us a straight answer here, Shane.
Oh, neither, but I guess if I had to pick, I'd say dog.
Okay. As for me, I'm not really a cat person, but I'm not really a dog person either.
See?
I mean, I used to have a dog, And she was the sweetest thing ever, you know, would never hurt a fly, would never bark or get angry at anyone. She was so, so sweet. But every cat I've come across seems to be, you know, just content to do their own thing and, you know, relax. But I've never really wanted to, you know, have a cat because it seems like a lot of work to maintain the cleanliness of your house. And I have problems with that anyways. The whole family being pack rats.
Oh,
so,
okay.
I mean, I'm probably the least bad at that. But, you know, being the youngest, I've also had less time to accumulate things. So adding cats to that, I feel, would just... would not be fun.
Yeah, and they can do lots and lots of, you know, weird things.
Oh, yeah, they can scratch up all sorts of things, or they can knock over things.
Yeah, and they get in the most odd places, you know. And...
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
Or leave droppings in the most odd places.
Yeah, and I mean, you can't teach them to be search and rescue animals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then again, a lot of the same things happen with dogs, too, right? So, I mean,
yeah. It
really comes
it's
down
a matter
to
of
whether...
training and obedience and... You know,
and whether
how much you're willing
patience.
To put up with. Yeah, see, there you go.
The willpower to do it. So, I like. I'd say I still like dogs better. I like the friendliness aspect of it, but I can see why people would like cats. But I don't think they'd be personally for me.
All right, that is probably one of the shortest questions we've ever had. Three words. Well, two, since I don't think IR is a word. Thank you, Brian. The next one is from Thieves. Hey guys, what is your favorite minigame in-game? If necessary, what would you add to it to make it even better? Any hopes and expectations with the upcoming quest? And three, looking back on your own noob days, what's the stupidest thing you can remember doing? Stupidest, sorry, that was my typo.
Yeah. That's okay. Your word typo?
Yes, typo with my mouth.
Yes.
Favorite minigame? I mean...
No, it's not your favorite minigame, Shane. It's your favorite minigame in-game. So it can't be any minigame that's not in the game.
Alright, I would personally say Castle Wars. Since you know, that was the original RS minigame that was added in-game. And what I would do to it to make it better is I would make it so that you can join... any minigame, even Castle Wars, from any which world, so that you don't always need to go to the Castle Wars world to do it. I can go to World 72 or World 66, just go to the Castle Wars lobby, click the button to go into one of the portals and be taken to, you know, a specific Castle Wars little world where I can play the game and not have to, you know, hunt worlds down and look for people to play. So that's what I would add to it. I'd also like to see it be made less campy. Because with, you know, the stuns and spells and everything that is possible now with RS3, you know, unless your team is specifically geared to handle every which combat situation that can come up, you can be shut down pretty hard by a team that knows what they're doing. So I would look at maybe adding more paths out of the castle and, well, anything combat related also comes down to tick rate. So, yeah, lots of things I'd like to see happen with Castle Wars, but I don't think they ever will. So. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As for me, when I played, the one that I liked the most, of course, was when I was free to play, and that was the first free to play minigame, which was Fist of Guthix. And I actually really liked that one. I'm just going
around. Well, that's dead content these days.
Yeah, but back then I used to really, really like it, and there was a lot of people that played it back then as well, because it was kind of like a hide and seek sort of thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
you had to really have your wits about you, and I really, really enjoyed it back then. But one of the other things I liked
of it was you had to go to the middle to get points. So I mean, you could hide or you couldn't. It was up to you how you did it. But anyways, continue.
Yeah, you kind of go to the middle, gain some points, and then you try and run away as soon as you see the person coming, that would come after you, right? But You could also hide in the multitudes of people too, and I was really good at doing that. Because then you wouldn't be able to click on them because there's like 20 other people in that same square, right?
Oh, so. Right. And this was the era of fixed window gameplay where the player names would overlap.
Yeah, and there'd be three options for each player, right? So they'd only have room for about 7 or 8, and then. So it was really fun back then. I had some good times with that, but another mini game I really liked back then was Duel Arena. But that's just because you could set all the different rules and you could kind of go based on skill.
Yeah, and I mean, you could also basically gamble there because, as it was back in the day, RS Combat, assuming you were the same level, was basically a number draw.
Yeah. Yeah, and I like doing that.
Really?
And it also came down to who was also best able to sneak in the last word on the thing there, because then he could, have magic disabled men untick it at the last moment.
Oh, they added a confirmed box for that. They added a confirmed box for that.
And then they did add that in, took all the fun out of it. But
you were an evil PvP'er back in the day.
I had to be. I had to have some way to make up my money. I lost it all doing the clan wars. I'd die all the time and I wouldn't get anything from it. People are like, oh, they just make the money through members. I'm like, I can't make it through members. I don't have members. So there you go, eh?
That's such a different perspective. You don't hear that anymore. You don't hear anyone PvPing anymore either, aside from Wilderness Warbands.
And, yeah, because they neutered it completely, basically.
And 3 or 4 days after Fist of Guthix was reworked last month, and that's it.
Yeah.
Someone needs a fist. Anyways.
Of Guthix?
Well, just, a fist in the face. But
anyways. Oh, okay.
Yes.
Just a general one, not anyone's fist in particular?
That's correct.
Okay, so not yours, not mine.
Correct.
Okay.
Hopes and expectations with the upcoming quest. Okay, let me just summarize it here. Going through the quests we've had this year so far. No stealth puzzles that are horribly designed from a usability perspective. That's number one. No plot holes. No third parties appearing and taking over the quest. And, well, nothing too annoying from a skilling standpoint where you need to sit there for a good 45 minutes skilling. So as you can tell, I've pretty much summarized this year's 3 or 4 quests that we've had so far as things that we should not expect having. And that is, Dishonor Among Thieves, the poorly designed puzzle from a usability standpoint. Granted, it did make sense otherwise, so that's number one. Heroes Welcome, that ended up being a Dragon King quest when it was marketed as a Fremenic quest, so I'm expecting us to have a Vampire quest this Monday, and a quest that actually has maybe some lore implications and doesn't make me skill for 40-plus-odd minutes. So, yep.
And if it is going to be a vampire quest, it's got to have someone in there that dies due to blood loss. I mean, otherwise you don't have good villains in vampires, right? I mean, that's why Twilight is so terrible.
Oh, we knew that was going to come up at some point. Wonder if it'll come up in next week's quest again.
We'll have to see, won't we?
There is still time for them to jump the shark with that series. And, I don't think JX needs to make the vampires into a Twilight-like franchise. I think the vampires in RuneScape have their own follower base. So, it's not something that's probably going to happen. But if JX wanted to pull the wool over our eyes, they could. That would be a good April Fool's quest, by the way.
Pull the cowl over our eyes, so to speak.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We have those. Sure. Mm. Sure.
All right, and the last question was looking at back at your own noob days, what's the stupidest thing you can remember doing? Well, the stupidest thing I can remember doing was spelling things differently just because I thought they were cool.
Oh, like, yeah.
For instance, the word anyway.
Yes.
I used to spell that with the letter N, the letter E, then W-A-Y. Anyway. I used to spell it like that because I thought it was cool that it sounded phonetically similar.
Oh, that's good.
So if you go through all my posts on the forums.
Yeah, I'm doing that right now, actually.
Yeah, I sound like, well.
Oh, you did that with anyone as well.
Anyone, yeah, I did that too. Anyone. And,
anyone know if he can appear on the free servers? I want to see him. LOL. And topic,
yeah.
Bob the Jagex Cat.
Oh, and if you've like, you know, the hyphenated Y-O-U, you know, apostrophe V-E. I used to do that with a U, V-E. That was another one. Oh, I didn't use, you know, any of that stuff. Yeah.
So you're upset about your grammar then?
Yeah. Because I did it on purpose too. I could have spoke properly if I wanted to, but I did it on purpose because I thought it was cool. But this is what we think when we're 14, right? Because that's how old I was when I first started.
Now, if you have a disorder of getting sick or having seizures by laughing at pitiful pics, look away. Here are my extremely pitiful items, and in fact, this is all I have.
Oh dear, that you're looking at my first bang picture?
Yeah.
Oh dear. It probably is pretty similar still.
And yeah, saying you're not members, Rune Scimitar, so there you
go.
I
said I was not members probably once every five posts. Isn't that funny? I took pride in that too, eh? That I just was only that, and that was all my hard-earned money was made using free-to-play means. And then I found out that, you know, it was basically nothing. Because everyone else had so much more anyways, because they're a lot easier to make money on members.
No. All right.
But there you go. That's probably the funniest thing I can remember from my noob days. And it's easy to remember it too, because it's all online, it's all there. Whereas memories of real life when you're, you know, actual noob days from when you're a teenager, you can't remember them because all you have are maybe photographs or Facebook posts.
Well, not even that. So
yeah, Facebook wasn't really around when you were a teenager, was it?
Oh, thank God. Thank God. I remember when texting became a thing.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
It's like, why would you want to type with such an ancient phone and talk to someone that way when your words look like they're all butchered?
Yeah.
Well, the smartphone fixed all that, and now we have full QWERTY keyboards on our iPhones that let us type properly. Well, in some cases, but anyways, the silliest / stupidest thing I remember doing way back when.
I've got one for you. If you can't think of it.
It would be mining tin and copper south of Iraq, walking to the Lumbridge furnace, one load at a time, you know, getting the right ratios right to make the bronze bars, and then walking all the way up north to the rock anvils and smithing them there. I would do that run when, I mean, in reality, I guess I was mining in the right spot for tin and copper, I think. But
oh,
I could have banked
them
somewhere else. I mean, I could have banked them in Lumbridge, or it probably would have been just quicker to bank them in Varrock and then use a furnace in Falador. I don't know why I did that. And plus, this was before the day where we had, you know, the bank outside of Lumbridge, and the only bank was upstairs at the top of the Lumbridge Castle, believe it or not, because we did not have the recipe for disaster just yet. Mm-hmm. So, but I never really did stupid things. So, I mean, I prefer not to remember those.
Revisionist, eh? It never happened. You have no proof of that.
Exactly.
But here's one thing we do have proof of that I remember. That I would say was probably your stupidest thing. And that was blocking Brad when he wouldn't buy any of your maple logs.
You remember that?
Of course I do.
How many people know about this?
I don't know.
I thought that was just between me and him.
You showed me the picture, like, years ago, remember?
Well, it was funny at that point.
It still is funny.
Yeah, anyways, long story short.
Just because you guys became such good friends afterwards. Normally when you block someone, you never talk to them again, so just thought it was really funny.
Yeah, long story short, he wouldn't buy my maple logs for his fire baking. He insisted on doing willows, so, as the story goes, that happened, and persisted for about a month and a half, or maybe a month. I don't know.
Yeah, you were just trying to get a straight answer out of him, weren't you?
Yeah, exactly. I just wanted the best deal.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted the best deal, and he had the money, so I didn't see why he wouldn't.
Oh.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there's lots of other things that we've done. I mean, we're a lot older now, so we make mistakes a lot less, but... Oh.
This is true.
I can remember some doozies, that's for sure.
Oh, boy. All right. Thank you, thieves. And the last one.
All right, this question is from Trucky. If another dragonkin attacked a major city in RuneScape, which one would it be? Do you believe that Jagex would rebuild that city brand new and stunning, or leave it to rot like Edgeville? Okay, first off, he's asking which one would it be? Is it which dragonkin or which major city?
I think major city, since there's only something like 12 dragonkin left or something like that. Or no,
or
six?
Is it which RuneScape?
I'm remembering something else where there's only 12 of them left, and they had to hunt them down. Oh, no. It wasn't 12. It was 6 or 7. Ah, right. Iconians. Thinking Star Trek Online here. Got my... storyline's confused, but I don't know. I think it would probably end up being Varrock.
Probably,
just because you know, so close to the area that Zaros used to control, and then Zamorak took it from him, and Dragonkin, of course, were involved in that. But I mean. At the end of the day, I don't think we're going to see that because we have made significant progress in our relationship with the Dragonkin, mainly from Hero's Welcome Quest, which, as I said, that was an odd quest. So we are on speaking terms with them, and they, I mean, don't know what to think of us as the World Guardian, but at the end of the day, I think we do have some pull with them. So I'd say Varrock, but I don't think it's going to happen. And, Jagex would rebuild it, and they would use it as a way of, well, rebuilding the city, which, I mean, I don't think there's any roadmap to spruce up Varrock as it is. Next one is Falador, and that's being done around Halloween. So. Mm-hmm. All right. And I don't suppose you have anything on that one.
Not really. I can't really think of any poorly designed cities in RuneScape, because after all, they were designed. They didn't just kind of grow out of nowhere. Nowhere. They didn't just grow out of Norway. But I was just thinking back on my own city, on how, you know, if they did rebuild it, the streets would probably be a lot straighter than the...
You'd have sewage systems that worked?
Yeah, and there'd be parking that could actually, you know, stop on the side of the road and have room to pass by people. I mean...
Yeah, well, let's just be thankful that bureaucracy doesn't exist in RuneScape.
Yeah. That would be really bad, wouldn't it?
Indeedy-dums. All right. Thank you for the questions, everyone. And if you want to send one of these questions in so we can hear your great voice, or you just want to talk to us about something that's on your mind and get our opinion on it, you can do that in a number of ways. First one is to email, text, or audio to questions@rsbab.com. Or you can leave us a voicemail or send us a text message to our Google Voice number, which is 571-57-BNB, otherwise spelt out as 571-572-2632. And, of course, the forum topic every week at update.rsbnb.com/ask. All right, so tech news.
Ooh, I see a lot of Apple in here.
Yeah, it's the one week of the year I get to, you know, talk a lot about Apple. So, figured might as well, right?
Yeah. Well, I guess it had to happen sometime, right?
Yes, true. So, iPhone 6S is out. That's the main thing that people were expecting at this week's Apple event. As the S implies, mainly an evolutionary skip from the iPhone 6. Comes in pink, a.k.a. rose gold.
A.k.a. pink.
Yeah, you think it's pink or rose gold?
It's pink, obviously. Who calls a color rose gold? Rose is a flower, and gold is a metal. That's definitely pink.
Yeah, and you know, I
then again, I'm a guy. A woman might call that differently.
I think they call it rose gold just to say that, okay, so you can be a guy and you can get a pink phone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, of course, they also got their other colors of silver, space gray, and, of course, regular gold. Mm-hmm. Of course, the main feature of this new iPhone is 3D Touch, which is basically a step forward from last year's Force Touch on the MacBooks and Apple Watch. So basically, as you're using the iPhone 6S, you'll have the option to press down harder on your screen with three levels of force. So you'll have your, you know, your standard tap, right? You tap a smartphone screen, something happens, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can press a bit harder, and you get a second action. Then you press even harder than that, you'll get a third action, which Apple is calling peak and pop, respectively, for the next two. And it provides tactile feedback when you do this. So that is, when you press it, you'll actually feel like you're pressing a button, which I think is pretty good. And it doesn't actually vibrate the whole phone. So Android people might say, oh, we've had this for years. You press something on the screen, it vibrates. Well, no. This actually only vibrates in the certain area where you're pressing it to provide tactile feedback on that button. Which, I mean, at the end of the day, that's the real story of the iPhone 6S, 3D Touch, because it's going to open up a whole new possibility of interaction for app designers, which, when you think about smartphones, we've basically had the same gesture since 2007. So it's always nice to see advancement on that front. And plus, well, like I said last year, this is going to be the thing to look at going forward, because at some point, we're going to be able to have buttons on the screen that we can actually feel when we run our fingers over them. So, that is what to be excited about in the 6S. And of course, upgraded camera, upgraded CPU, pretty much everything else you'd expect from a traditional iPhone release.
And I guess it's actually quite ingenious from a marketing standpoint, right? Because people are wondering, oh, what's the new iPhone going to be called? You know, they had the 4, the 4S, 5, 5S, and the 6. Now they've got the 6S, and people are like, okay, well, that's what I thought it'd be. So people might not buy it in that case. But it doesn't matter how many they sell, because it'll still be a success. Oh, there's the crickets again.
Yeah.
6S, yeah. 6S. You know,
yes, come on, yes, I get
come
that.
Come on, Shane. I can hear some of you laughing out there. That's good. That's good.
We also have the 6S Plus. What would you call that?
Well, it'd be if they actually sold more of them.
So it'd be a plus.
That would be a plus, isn't it?
Oh, boy. But, of course, yeah. This can also shoot 4K video, if that's your thing, I guess. I mean, okay, we don't have 4K televisions yet that are mainstream, but you definitely need 4K video on your phone.
It's because all the televisions that people bought like 3 and 4 years ago are still good. The ones they bought 3 and 4 years before that were terrible in comparison. But the
ours
ones
is 6 years
have
old.
Now are,
yeah, the, close to
yeah, the ones they have now are still good, right? So they people
really?
Aren't. Well, generally, yeah. Like once they got the flat screens out, you know, people didn't really need anything else.
Yeah. So, I don't know. The build quality is just horrible, but we're off on a different track. The one reason you do need the 4K camera is that with the 6S, and you're right, it does sound like success.
It doesn't kind of. It is. Oh, well.
You can take live photos. So, for example, you take a photo of someone or a waterfall or something, and you press your screen. You just tap your screen, you get a little bit of motion as to the photo. So it basically brings your photo to life. So that's interesting. But anyways, I think what most people are talking about, for good or bad, this week with the Apple event is the iPad Pro. Basically a 12.9-inch iPad targeted at the business market that has been rumored for so many years and has finally arrived. Personally, I think this device is going to be good if the applications exist for it. That is, the application developers take to, you know, writing business-grade applications using the new Apple Pencil, which is actually a thing, which we'll talk about in just a moment. But part of me wishes it ran OS X. It just does.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, iOS, at some point, you can say it can be either a tablet or a computer. Now, Microsoft has the Surface, which this actually does look quite a lot alike, because they actually have the so-called smart keyboard for iPad, which, from profile shot, you can't actually tell whether you're looking at a Surface or an iPad Pro. So, this is, whichever way you put it, a blatant copy of the Microsoft Surface, which is what Apple wanted to do because it's running iOS and they feel touch should be done on their touch-centric operating system. So I don't think it's for the listener base of this podcast, the iPad Pro. Businesses, perhaps, but it needs the applications. And, I mean, to be appealing to power users, it would have had to run OS X, and that's what I'm saying. So, I don't know. I just didn't feel as though it was a special thing when it was announced, which is rare for Apple.
It's because it feels like sometimes at this point when they're just making improvements, it just feels like, oh, it's a little bit lighter, the screen's a little bit better, it's a little bit more powerful, but it's not really anything new, you know?
Yeah.
Well,
the iPad Pro is supposed to be the new product, but like it just felt like a catch-up product.
It's just another tablet
is not,
that's probably really good, but...
Which is
not
something
really
that you expect from Apple.
Mm-hmm.
So... I don't know, we'll see how it does, but I honestly think if it ran OS X, it would be more compelling. Or even offer the choice between an OS X and an iOS version, because we know OS X so far has been optimized to run on the same processors that the iPad runs. So it would be possible. It's just a question of, you know, does it make sense to do that? But anyways, the Apple Pencil is basically their fancy little stylus. They don't like calling it a stylus, believe it or not.
It's a pencil. It's not a. If they wanted to call it the Apple Stylus, they would have.
That's right. But basically, it's got sensors in it, communicates with Bluetooth, and enables palm rejection so that you can basically have, you know, a tilt of your pencil, and that controls how thin or thick your lines will be that you draw on the screen. And the idea of it is it's the most precise way to interact with an iPad, because when you think about it, your fingers are fat. And, I mean, they're not exactly the most precise instrument you have. So if you're trying to draw something, a detailed diagram, you don't want to use your fingers. You want to use a pencil. Mm-hmm. So that's what this accomplishes.
Didn't Steve Jobs, like, famously have an opposition to styluses, though? And that's why
they call it
the Apple Pencils, because they didn't want to kind of spit on his grave, so to speak. I was just reading a quote here. Who wants a stylus? You have to get him, put him away, you lose him. Yuck. Nobody wants a stylus. Let's not use a stylus. If you see one, they blew it. So, 5 years later, they're coming out with the Apple Pencil, which is not a stylus, even though it is a stylus. Go figure.
Yeah, right? And I mean, you plug it into your iPad and it charges. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. I don't have high hopes for it, but perhaps. It is also worth noting in the announcement process for the iPad Pro, they did bring Microsoft on stage to demo Microsoft Office. Mm-hmm. So, they got that going for them. All right. So, let's see. We got the iPhone 6S, the iPad Pro. The watch updates really aren't worth mentioning all that much. You can get the watch in the rose gold now, and they added some new bands. So. Also, but the next biggest thing that I think the main story of this week's Apple news is the revamped Apple TV, in that it allows developers to write applications for the TV, which basically means that if you run a media streaming service or you run a home media server like Plex, you can now write an application and have it natively on the Apple TV. So that's one side of it. But the other side is that they have now a Bluetooth-controlled remote with an accelerometer in it to be used with games. So they are essentially becoming the Wii of 2015.
So they're trying to bunch in on the console market then, I guess.
Yeah. Because there's tons and tons of games for iOS, and they're really, really great in terms of, you know, their graphics and whatnot. Like, some of them even look better than the graphics on the Wii. So Nintendo's got to be worried about this. And this is what we were discussing last week with a release of a Pokemon game for iOS. It's like, okay, there's a new Pokemon game for iOS. How long until Nintendo becomes irrelevant? Well, Apple TV is one step further to that end demise result. So, I ultimately think that this is going to be the way that you're going to play casual games in the future, is on an Apple TV. Because, it's easy to get into in terms of price. Only $149.
I still think people will just play them on their phones and whatnot. Well, because you take your phone everywhere. You can't bring your Apple TV everywhere, right?
Well, sure. Of course, you'll still play them on your phones. But, I mean, if you want to have a game that's on your phone, you got your mobile version, right? But then you also got a big screen version that you can do more with that you play on the Apple TV. It's a perfect way to develop the next kind of, you know, hit game. I honestly think that's the way it's going to go. And Who knows? Maybe some kind of RuneScape game would work well for that.
RuneScape on consoles? Where have we heard this before?
Well, it was going to be on tablets, and if they're going to, you know, have a way to put it on iOS someday in the future, I don't know if that's going to happen. I mean, might as well put it on Apple TV as well. So, this is the one I am most excited about this week, just because of the applications and what it's going to mean for casual. I emphasize casual there. Casual gaming going forward. Because, obviously, you're not going to be a market for this, nor will I. But, I mean, you just want to have a casual group game, go right ahead. Apple TV is going to be the best way to do it. Also has Siri, and can search all the sources, so Netflix, Apple TV, iTunes, everything. So it's all there.
Yeah, I think they'll have a lot of work to try and muscle in on the market share, because I'm not sure if it's going to be as big as you think it might be. But
well, I'm not saying it's going to, you know, replace the Xbox or anything like that. I'm not saying it's going to be that big. I think that it's going to be a credible alternative to the Wii. If the people who normally write for the Nintendo consoles were to just write for iOS, or tvOS in this case.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm saying. It's not going to be like an Xbox level of something. It's going to take the place of a Wii. Because, I mean, as it is, they're going to sell a wrist strap for your Apple remote. Just like you have wrist straps for the Wii. But I like it. I think it's the way to go
forward.
I think
the only reason why it threatens the Wii is because Nintendo really hasn't done anything new in a very long time now. They just keep going back to their old ideas and then rehashing them. So, I mean,
and that's
sure,
the thing.
I mean, the things that they do, they're still popular, but at some point they're going to lose out. It's just a matter of time.
Yep, there you go. So,
Apple I mean, there's TV. Only so many new Mario games or Pokemon games that they're going to do before people get tired of it, right?
Exactly. And, I mean, independent game developers, just look at how big of a hit Angry Birds was.
Minecraft?
Yeah. So this is going to be the kind of console or device that's going to break that next step for independent game developers. That's why I'm so excited about it. So, yes. Anything else on the Apple TV that you'd like to talk about?
No, I think we pretty much covered it all.
Yes. All right. iOS 9 will be released Friday, September 16th, and OS 10, El Capitan, will be released on the 30th. I'm assuming
September 16th is a Wednesday.
Ah, I see. All right. Wonder how I got that. Okie dokie, then. Next piece of tech news. Google and Twitter are teaming up to offer instant articles so that whenever you click a link on Google or Twitter, you'll be taken to a little page that shows basically a rundown of that article. And this is kind of the same thing that Facebook did in terms of, you know, wanting publishers, New York Times, etc., to put content on their devices, except this gives it back to the publisher, and the publisher has total control over how it looks and the ads that run in it. So it's a much more publisher conscientious way of getting news out there, which is better than the whole, you know, monolithic Facebook model of doing things. And, I mean, at the end of the day, when you're looking at a link on Google or Twitter, you want it to look good, but you also want to be mindful of what website it's on. And that's what this is hopefully going to accomplish, which is good, I think.
I think it'll be interesting to see what they do with it, because might be easier to find news that way. Who knows?
Yeah, and I mean, that's
while you're thinking of it, right? Because when you're on the internet, your mind can go different places so rapidly, right? So if it's something that makes it easier and faster to access, then it might be a good thing. We'll we'll have to see when it comes out, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean, the whole reason for this is the response to the Facebook ones, because, I mean, at the end of the day, which kind of publisher really wants their content and their ad revenue going through Facebook before they get a cut of it, right? They want to have their own ads, and you know, that is what Google needs to be mindful of, because if someone finds another way of doing that, well, Google's main source of income is ad revenue, so if that gets destroyed, well, I mean, not saying it ever will, but Google needs to be mindful of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I honestly hope that this will provide a way, you know, to just get the news story as it is and not have to worry about extra fluff and blog spam and that kind of stuff when you're searching for a topic. So, we'll see. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also worth noting that Google and Twitter will not host the content. They're just going to be cached pages of it that'll display nicely, which is good.
Mm-hmm. Because it puts more power back into the the publishers and the innovators who create the stuff in the first place.
Exactly. All right. Next up, Facebook likes mean a computer can know more about you than your own mother. You buy this?
No, your mother always knows you best because they know you for your entire life. Facebook only knows you from when you started becoming computer literate. Sorry. I was trying to combine the two words there for some reason.
You were having some speaking issues.
Yes, I was having some typos there.
Oh, boy. But anyways.
I wouldn't be surprised, though, if some people that use Facebook so much and are on it all the time and they share and like all sorts of different things. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it can accurately describe what you like and what you don't like. Because, at some point, you know, you still use Facebook, but you might not see your mom very often after you move out and move on and whatever with your own life. So, at some point, yeah, it is going to know more than your mother.
Yeah, and I mean, just quoting here from the article, a computer needs data from only 10 Facebook likes to beat the accuracy of a person's coworker at judging personality traits, such as extroversion, conscientiousness, and neuroticism. A computer needs 70 likes to be more accurate than a person's friends. With 250 Facebook data points, the computer can beat someone's spouse.
And it also says that may sound like a huge number, 250, but people click the like button quite a lot, you know.
I mean,
who only use it once or twice a day will click it some at least once, you know. And
I'd say more than that. I'd say 10 plus times a day if you only use it once, and you're really on there, and you have a really busy feed.
Well, I'd only click it a couple times, but even then, it only takes half a year to gain all the information it needs, right?
Yeah. And, I mean, this is the thing that often comes up with the internet in general. It's, okay, so we can build pictures around your marketing and whatnot, what to market to you based on how you search and, you know, what websites you go to. But the Facebook likes are even more personal than that because it's things that you choose to follow and take part in, right?
Yeah, it's stuff that you like, not stuff that you choose to, you know, share with others or whatnot. So it might be things that you wouldn't really tell that many people, for instance.
Yeah.
I'm not thinking like anything nefarious. I'm just saying, you know.
Yeah, of course.
Say you're secretly into a certain book series. I mean, sometimes you might not even talk about that with anyone ever. But, you know, Facebook knows about it because you've liked the author's page and you just want updates on when the next book's going to be released, that sort of thing. You know? So it's things like that. Yeah, it almost is kind of scary how good it would know you.
Well, yeah, and I mean, that's like I said, the thing. If you're going to be worried about privacy, first things first, you need to use Linux, you need to not use Google, you need to not use Facebook, and anytime you go on the internet, your browser submits basically a fingerprint of who you are, and it can tell exactly who you are just based on the what the browser emits. So, I mean, it's a futile effort. If you want to be private, you just need to be offline.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's everywhere nowadays, for sure. And it's not going to go away either. It's when they start, you know, using those to make accurate predictions based on real life events, you know. That's when it starts getting a bit iffy, right?
It can say accurateness and stuff like that, but they can also rock the boat a bit too. Like, that's the thing that worries me the most in election years is when you have Google and Facebook showing you things might not be favorable to a certain candidate, but you have no control over that. They see what you like and show you the opposite.
For instance, think of it this way. Say you like a certain hockey team or something, and then they take all of the people that have liked that certain hockey team, and then they look at what music they like, and then say 70% like a certain band. Well, at that arena, that's what you're going to hear probably is that band playing.
And
but now
you just
think
nailed
of it.
That is how Facebook is going to make money.
Yeah.
They're going to sell those insights to whoever.
Yeah, they're going to sell that information to whoever. But when it really gets scary is in the, like you said, in the election year is when, say, your friend runs for office, yes, and he runs in a certain area. Well, all of the things that he likes are now projected onto you, basically, because as a politician, if you like him, then whatever he likes is, ergo, what you like. So then it kind of feedbacks, and then you'll get all these ads for something that you may not even know, right? Say, a certain position on the environment, for instance. You'd start having all these articles about Greenpeace pop up, and you have no idea why, but that would be why. And
well,
you would
I think
never
that's
know.
Fairly obvious given where you are.
Well, fair enough, but you know what I mean, though. It's not something you'd have control over. It might not even be something you like.
Yeah,
but,
and it's just like a blind influence. And this is what I've been driving home this entire year: is that if you're on the internet, you're using Google, you're using Facebook, not so much Twitter, but you're using one of these, you really got to be careful of what you're looking at, and you know the order of links and whatnot. So it is something to worry about.
And
I don't think we're at conspiracy level yet, but we're getting there.
Yeah, we're getting there. I mean, if say it takes a number of people in a certain district for voting, and up here we'd call them ridings. What do they call them in the U.S.?
Districts,
congressional
districts. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So say they take all of the people that are on Facebook in there. They analyze what the likes are, and say there's a common link between all of them. You don't think that candidate would like to know what that link is and they can kind of push towards it? Say there's a bunch of them that like a certain kind of, I don't know, certain kind of food or something. Maybe they'll try and pitch something towards having a new revitalization of the area that includes this product. And people will say, hey, I really like Orange Julius, I'd like to go there and have something, you know? So people
they don't have that in the U.S., I believe, do they?
We'll go with Dairy Queen or McDonald's or whatever, it doesn't matter. Regardless, you know, people will subconsciously go for something when they don't even realize it. It's going to start creating a world of zombies. Not that we're not already zombies to begin with, but...
I don't fear technology.
It's going to be really interesting to see where they take this. I think.
Yeah, I don't fear technology. I don't fear Google and Facebook. I just want everyone, you know, to browse the internet without blinders on and actually be mindful of what they're clicking. And that, yeah, I mean, we were worried about Google knowing more than us, but based on this 250 data points, I think it's safe to say that given how much more personal Facebook is than Google, that they're the ones who know you best. So just keep that in mind when you're using. All right. Well, I hope we didn't scare anyone there. I didn't want to sound conspiracy-ish.
Hopefully not.
Like, I mean, we didn't pull the tinfoil hats out, did we?
No, I don't think so. I think we're just imagining different ways it could go and what they could do with it. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens, but it's not really something we can either predict or stop, even if we don't want to, because even so, it's really hard to disconnect from the digital world now, especially once you've gotten into it. I mean, I can understand.
When you get a smartphone.
Yeah, when you get a smartphone, I mean, they'll track you wherever you go, and they'll start sending you things based on that. So, I mean, it's really difficult. So it's just something we have to accept once we go into the digital world, really, because it's a different world, unlike our own, it seems.
All right, well, let's step into a different world then with the Skill of the Month update for September. Prayer.
Nice segue.
Indeed, that's what they pay me for. But
they pay you.
Yeah.
Who's they?
No, the fine listeners. But anyways, and the people who donate to RSBNB. But
well,
they don't pay us.
Have a
they
prayer
pay the
that they still keep doing that. Then, aha. So, skill of the month.
Yes, Arceus is currently still in first place in this prayer skill of the month. He's maintained a linear trajectory thus far. He's gained 5.9 million prayer XP. Second place is Tim with 3.1 million XP gained. And third place is Ally with 1 million XP gained. So we are seeing some movement in this. Pretty much everyone else is below 100k except for Metal Maniac, which, I mean, prayer, kind of an expensive one to train, right?
Yeah, and pretty much everyone else has a linear trajectory, too. It's just the wrong kind of linear trajectory, I guess.
It's a flat
line.
Hey,
But you see, there's someone up there, number 7, Fierce Duncan, with... He only started off with 8,000 experience. That's pretty amazing. He's already got 42,000, then. How many levels would that be? That's pretty cool, so good on you. Keep going, guys.
Something like 30,000, or level 30, maybe? I don't know. I don't remember the lower XP charts anymore. But anyways... It's also worth mentioning that Arceus started the competition off with 140 million XP in the bag, so he is a very devout person in terms of RuneScape theology.
Mm-hmm.
I guess if we ever need a priest, we'll know where to go, eh?
I guess we will, eh?
Anyways, speaking of further competitions, there's a double XP weekend coming in 2 weeks. Give or take a day, and we are running a quadruple double XP skilling competition. No, that doesn't mean you're going to get 8 times the XP. It means that you have 4 times to compete in this competition. We'll be running competitions for the entire 3 days in each of the 4 skill groups, and that is, of course, combat, gathering, artisan, and support. The combat skill is going to be constitution, gathering will be woodcutting, artisan will be runecrafting, and support will be agility. These were randomly chosen, and it starts on 12 p.m. UTC, in-game time, on September 25th, and ends on 12 p.m. on the 28th. So if you want to sign up, you can just head on over to the show notes at update.rsbnb.com and find the link there and sign up in one of these, or all of them, or two of them, or however many you want, and we will have prizes for the winner of each category. Currently participating is, of course, our website and my clan Quest. So look forward to seeing who all signs up in this. And we do, of course, plan to also reach out to the wider RS community. So if you are listening to this and you manage a community or a clan and you guys want to compete, just get in contact with me and I'll give you a post that you can post, and we'll take it from there. And to do that, just send me a PM on the forums at rsbnb.com/forums. Any of these look appealing to you?
Well, it looks pretty cool, and it's good that there's constitution there, because then no matter what combat kind of thing you train, you're most likely going to get constitution out of it, so that's good.
Yeah, and I believe free-to-play players do get 20% bonus XP, so they can compete in, of course, 3 of these skills, constitution, woodcutting, and runecrafting, if you want.
Mm-hmm.
So... and fire up the old King Kulla account and do woodcutting.
I don't think so, but it's a nice thought, though.
Or runecrafting, for that matter.
Maybe, maybe if you do a prayer, it'll happen.
All right. So, start us off with the achievements of the week.
Okay, so the achievements of the week. The Ah-Ah Man. I say that because he says it that way, right? So he got 99 mything and smithing on... did I say mything? Did I really say mything? My goodness. 99 mining and 99 smithing on September the 8th, 2015. It's like I've forgotten how to talk or something. Oh... Also on September the 8th, Thieves got 99 divination, and on September the 6th, Sirion, I think that's how you say it, Sirion got 99 thieving. It's interesting that Thieves didn't get 99 thieaving.
He's got like 200 mil thieving XP. We talked about that when he got it.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. And then on September the 5th, Exort got 99 strength.
Right on.
Now he doesn't have to exhort anything else into strength now.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy, indeed.
All right. What do you got for pick of the week? Thank you. And congratulations, everyone.
Congratulations to you all. And maybe that'll be the new skill, mything.
Don't give them any ideas. They're already considering adding sailing to old school.
Of course, at one time we thought sailing was just a myth. So maybe
it's a myth. It was a myth. Anyways, pick of the week. Oh boy.
Pick of the week. Okay, so what I had a hard time coming up with a pick of the week, but this came up on my news feed the other day. It's called SC2VN, which stands for StarCraft II Visual Novel. So if anyone is unfamiliar with what a visual novel is, it's basically a type of video game that runs through a storyline, which you can go through as you can kind of role play as a certain character in a game and make decisions based on that way. So... I thought it was pretty cool because I hadn't really seen one based on a game that I'd played before, and it's all about the StarCraft II scene in Korea, and you're kind of playing out as a foreigner, as they call it, anyone who isn't Korean, basically, trying to make it in the StarCraft esports scene, which I thought was pretty cool because as far as you know, visual novels go. It's either based on either anime or manga, or it's based on, you know, well, for lack of a better term, relationships. You know, it's based on high schools or whatnot, or, you know, different people like that. So I thought something based on video games, that's kind of cool. I haven't really seen based on that. So they had a Kickstarter a while back. I didn't donate to them at all, but they've got a their first release out, so I thought I'd give it a try, and it looks pretty cool, actually. They got some really good art in it, so if you're into that sort of thing, you might want to check it out. It seems pretty cool.
I don't know, the anime style just gets in my way.
Yeah, it's not for everyone, right? But
what's the storyline? I mean, or have you started, or?
Well, I kind of started through the first little bit here. I just found out about it a couple days ago. But yeah, you basically start out as a kind of a new player to the scene, trying to make it, and you've soon discover it takes a lot more than just your in-game skills to make it into the scene.
Oh, so this is kind of like being a Pokemon master.
Kind of, I guess so, except for StarCraft 2.
So we could make a game about a game.
Yeah, you can make games about games. People do it all the time, but I thought it looked pretty cool anyways. So, yeah, I'm going to try playing it.
SC2VN does not include mature acts. This is not a dating simulator. Why does that need to be there?
Like I said, a lot of visual novels tend to be of the, you know, relationship kind, where you go in, you roleplay a certain character, and you're going to high school or something, and then you, you know, whatever, right? But, no, it's all about StarCraft II, which I thought was really cool, because I really liked it as well, StarCraft II and everything, so.
Oh, yeah, we got lots of fun stories about that game, more time than we have here.
Oh, we do, don't we?
Yes.
So I thought I'd give it a try, so, yeah. That's my pick.
All right, and well, that's a very long URL, so I'll just say find that in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. Well, since you're going to have a lot to talk about and what have we been doing, I'll just start and give everyone a brief rundown this week. This week I started the adventure of going for 99 divination. I know Earth will probably hate me for that, but that's okay. I also switched to magics in the farming, so that's going to go a bit faster. And, yeah, got 92 million farming XP. And, kind of just stopped a bit of the herb farming this week, because I farmed something like 3,200 herbs in the seasonal high score herb farming competition that Jagex had on. I was going for top 100 rank, but I think I petered out around rank 180. To go any further would have required me to give up sleep, which is not something I was going to do for a game and an in-game title. So, yeah. Just a bit of perspective for people wondering who ended up winning this. The winning player was Locky, who farmed 11,049 herbs in 1 week. 11,049. I finished at rank 188, farming 3328.
So that was what that thing with your timers was all about, eh?
Yes, 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 yes. And for anyone wondering, rank 100 was, let's see, how many herbs was that? 4795, so it was a good 1400 away. Which, by my calculations, probably would have been another 28 runs. Give or take, on average, maybe a little bit less. 25. So, would have had to give up lots of sleep. But, yeah, that's the week on RS. Now, like we said, we last had you on April or May.
It was May.
Yeah.
It was May, and so a lot of things have happened since then. I mean, we've gone through summer already since I last saw you all. And with that came a new promotion at work, so I've now moved up again, which is always good. Let's see. Has anything else happened in my life, Shane, that you can think of?
No, not really.
Not really? I don't think so either. Nothing really else has changed very much. The only thing that was exciting that did happen was I took 2 weeks off in the latter part of August, and I took a road trip with my new car. You guys might have remembered that I mentioned that I got a car back in January, and, well, I decided to take it on a road trip, and I had lots of fun. I traversed through British Columbia and explored a lot of different places that I hadn't seen before. Because normally on family road trips, we'd kind of just, you know, go straight there and then straight back. And then, you know, we wouldn't really, you know, look at anything along the way. And I kind of wanted to make a vacation out of it. So I took some extra time and saw some sights along the way. So I really enjoyed that, you know. Because British Columbia really is a beautiful province. And there's a lot
to see. That is your tagline.
Yeah, it is. That's what it's on the license plate. It's beautiful British Columbia. didn't your guys' change? Like, yours used to be Wild Rose Country, but it's definitely not Wild Rose Country anymore.
We axed the idea to change the license plate. We kept those and we're still Wild Rose Country.
Oh, okay. I thought so. But I wasn't sure.
Yeah, that was,
because I mean, you're definitely not Wild Rose Country anymore. That's for sure. Oh, anyways, yes, on the road trip, I ended up going out to a little place called Edmonton, where I saw a lot of family, and I saw some friends while I was there. And some of those friends that I saw was you.
Yes, we did enjoy that. Tell them about it, because I actually didn't mention it in What Have We Been Doing, oddly, the week it happened. Or no, yeah. I did, but I didn't go into detail.
Yeah, well, we had lots of fun. I mean, we went out to Fort Edmonton, which is a place that I hadn't seen in a very long time, and I think you made the distinction that we were you felt like we were trying to go uncover my repressed memories or something like that.
What?
So as we were going through different places, because I had been there for a wedding, but I couldn't really remember it too well. And I was like, oh, I remember this part of it. And you're like, oh, I feel like we're trying to uncover your repressed memories.
See, I don't even remember saying that. But
and we had another interesting thing when you mentioned to Mike that he isn't black. And then he said, thank you for noticing, and you call them a Vulcan for that.
Well, there should be some clarification here about this.
Sure, I'll let you explain.
Brian, who asked the question this week, for some reason thought that Mike, the Airbnb owner, aside from myself, was black. And I mean, ever since then, that's become a kind of a running joke in meetups, because you expected something different than what you got, but not that. Anyways.
Well, yeah, I mean, I knew he was in computers, and I knew he was a nerd, but I didn't think he'd be quite that short. And, you know, his voice is really deep and rich, and it makes you seem like he's going to be this gigantic bodybuilder type, right? But he's not at all. I mean, you know, it's just interesting how people tend to, you know, visualize a person based on their voice, and it may not turn out to be that way at all.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, we had a lot of fun there, and we got a lot of walking around. And yeah, they had an old guardhouse nearby that had little cells that could actually lock. And there was no one in the area, so we could have locked you in there, and no one would have found out about it for quite a while, probably. But we wouldn't do that, because Shane's our friend, and we need him to do the show and do a bunch of other things for us as well. So, you know, it's a mutually beneficial relationship, right?
Yes, I take care of you all.
You do. You're like our mother. Which, you know, Facebook now knows more about us than you do, so there you go. How does that make you feel?
Oh, I don't know about that, but...
Oh, I don't know. You do keep marvelous good track of all of us, don't you? Anyway.
There's the crickets.
There's the crickets, yeah. Yep, there they are again.
Yeah, all right. But tell them what you enjoyed most about that, then we'll wrap this up.
Oh, what I enjoyed most? Well, I think it was playing NHL with your dad, and we teamed up against Shane and Mike, and we ended up beating them about, was it 4 times out of 6 or something like that?
Yeah.
I think it was four times out of six or something like that. And that was quite a lot of fun, because the last time I played was the last time I was there 3 years ago, so I guess it was a whole bunch of big
and we were very surprised with that result.
Yeah, I think so too. I was surprised, for sure. I was surprised every time I scored. I'm like, how did I manage that? And then I played Reed, of course, and then he kind of murdered me.
Wiped the floor with you.
Yeah, and then, you know, ground me up into little bits. And then we had a good laugh about it anyways. And then I told him about the look that you give when I do bad jokes. And then I mentioned that I could hear the look. And then he's like, I can hear the look too.
And this is what happens when RSVNB folks meet in the real world. And you ran away from my sneezes, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Shane's sneezes. When you're next to him in real life, they're a lot more terrifying than they are on the show. I'm sure you've had a few unedited sneezes on the show, have you not?
Oh, I'm sure a couple have snuck through.
Yeah, so if you are familiar with them, they are... You could, if you attach that to a generator, you could probably harness power like something out of Monsters, Inc., you know? Like... You know how in Monsters, Inc. they attach the children's screams to their energy, and that's how they power the Metropolis and whatnot? We could do the same.
I've never watched that movie.
We could do the same with your sneezes, I'm sure.
Okay.
But yes, we had a lot of fun, and I wish I lived a little bit closer so we could do that more often. But
well,
they could always.
It's a perfect time in January.
Oh yeah, January, right when it's, you know, 3 feet of snow and minus 40 Celsius, right? You can always come here.
Undo the damage that was done this May, but anyways. Well, that was a good show, I think. Anything else before we go?
No, I don't think so, other than it's good to be on again, and it's good to talk to everyone, and hope you all enjoyed that.
All right. Well, thank you for listening, everyone. This has been RSVNB Update, and we will see you all next week. Thank you for sharing your time with us.
Thank you. See you later, everyone.